This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Prisoners in Michigan serve longer sentences than in any other state. That's according to a recent Pew study, which finds lengthy sentences have bloated the state's corrections budget. Michigan's corrections budget currently exceeds $2 billion. Meanwhile, the state sentencing guidelines have not been overhauled for 15 years. In response, the Michigan Law Review Commission has launched a bipartisan review to figure out just where Michigan stands in comparison to the rest of the nation and where reform might be needed. Joining us to talk about this is Russ Marlin. He's with the Michigan Department of Corrections, and he joins us from Lansing. And here in the studio, we're joined by Ann Yantis. She's a managing attorney for the State Appellate Defender's Office. It's good to have you both on the program.
Thank you, Cindy. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Cindy, for having me.
Can you give us, Ann, an idea of what was going on in 1998 to lead to these tough sentencing guidelines? What forces were at play?
Well, I think there was a sense that we needed to have more uniformity in sentences and less disparity among sentences. So there was a commission that was put into place, and there were 19 members. It was a pretty balanced commission that had several legislators, several judges, a prosecutor, defense attorney, victims' rights advocate, sheriff, director of the Department of Corrections.
So it was a very measured, studied thing. It wasn't knee-jerk, and a lot of different voices went into the conversation.
That's right, and that was important because the commission has the ability to tag people who are experts in sentencing law and to formulate policy for what the sentences should be. And the commission can be less prone to the political pressures that are in effect for the legislature. So they came up with recommendations. They looked at 700 felony offenses in Michigan, came up with recommended ranges. There was some guidance by the legislature, but there were a number of decisions made by the commission, and they tried to balance everything out.
So I guess the question remains, Russ, why do you think these guidelines haven't been looked at or updated in 15 years?
Well, I think that's because the legislature did away with that commission shortly after they passed these guidelines. I think that they're at the time was probably a desire to review them, and I think that's what we're starting to do now. But you're right. I mean, we put a lot of time and effort into these guidelines, put them in place, and then never reviewed them in the last 15 years to see if they're doing what the Sentencing Commission had intended them to do, if we're realizing the outcomes as a state that we would like to see from them. So I think this is an important step to take a look at them.
And looking back at the 15 years, Ann Yantis, have those sentencing guidelines made a difference in crime? Did being tough on crime pay off?
Well, I'm not sure that the crime rate has dropped dramatically. And I guess you would look at that because we seem to have – actually, we do have a large number of people in prison right now. And the increases have been primarily since the early 1980s. And the increase has been much greater than the rise in the state's population or the rise in crime generally. So we're incarcerating a large number of people. They have longer sentences now in Michigan for the average length of time that you serve. Our guidelines, in some respects, were harsher on violent crimes than the old guidelines had been. There had been a set of guidelines in effect before that from the courts, but these are legislative guidelines. They're a little tougher on violent crimes. But then in the 14 years since we've had these guidelines take effect in January of 99, the legislature has gone in and sort of on a piecemeal basis has increased the recommended ranges or moved crimes into higher crime categories.
So if anything, it's toughened them.
Yes.
And I'd like the thoughts of both of you. What have you both seen as the consequences of all of this and keeping offenders behind bars longer? I guess consequences both social and fiscal. Russ, let me start with you on that.
Well, you know, Ann was correct that we did see our prison population rise substantially from the early 90s all the way until we hit our all-time high in March of 2007. At 51,554. At that time, we were the fifth largest prison system in the country, only behind California, Texas, Florida, and New York. So we started doing what we could internally to take a look at prisoner reentry programs, using risk assessment instruments, working with our parole board to see if there's ways that we couldn't take a look at our prison population and do a better job of transitioning them back to the community. And I think we've done a really good job of that, and subsequently our prison population has dropped now to 43,300 approximately. So I think we went from the fifth largest prison system to the eighth or ninth today. And so we've tried to do what we can internally. But, you know, I think when you talk to folks like these folks from Council of State Governments that are beginning work here in Michigan, mm-hmm. who are national experts in this field, they'll say that our sentencing structure is very unique. It's unlike virtually any other state. And because of that, a number of ways it's unique, and because of that, that's why we're seeing a higher length of stay in Michigan than the national average.
We're speaking with Ann Yantis. She's a managing attorney for the State Appellate Defender's Office, and talking with Russ Marlin, who's with the Michigan Department of Corrections. Russ, you talked about the fact that Michigan's sentencing guidelines are unique. Give us some ideas of how so. How is Michigan unique amongst other states?
Well, I think one of the primary things is, you know, most states, the way you're scored, you take a look at the crime you committed and the circumstances surrounding that crime and your criminal history. And you're given points for both of those areas. And like on a graph where those two points intersect is a range of months. And that determines, A, whether you'll go to prison or not, and B, how long, if you do go to prison, you'll go to prison. And most states, that is it's a line, the in, the out decision, whether you go to prison or you stay local in a community-based sanction. What's unique to Michigan, we have this kind of gray area in the middle called straddle cells, where judges can either send someone to prison or sanction them with a community-based sanction. And so about 25% of all cases fall into that category, and they said that that category in of itself is very unique across the country. And I think when you look at county-level data, you'll see some judges who send 70% of that category to prison. Some counties, some judges, it's 10%. So there's a huge disparity between judges and counties with the same crime, same criminal history, who goes to prison and who doesn't.
And it sounds like the very reason back doubling back to 1998 was to kind of even out the disparities that were deemed a problem back then by doing this. Ann, what did you want to?
Well, and I agree with Russ on that certainly you will have disparity if you have a wide range of discretion. And judges are allowed to determine prison versus community placement without a lot of guidance there. But the other comment that some of the national groups have made about our guidelines, just starting to look at them now, is that they're much more complicated than the guidelines in other states, and that they also have a fair amount of double counting. So what they mean by that is our guidelines are set up so that they have 27 variables, and you receive points under each variable for certain aggravating factors. Now, our guidelines don't pick up any mitigating factors like maybe the federal system does.
Okay.
So you have only these aggravating factors, and you have a large number of variables. So you're picking up a lot of aggravating conduct, and then you have double counting. And, for example, if the offender has two prior felony convictions, there's a variable that picks up the number of prior convictions, and you'll receive points there. And then there's another variable that picks up whether you are still serving the sentence for one or both of those prior convictions. So you'll receive points there. Mm-hmm. And then there's a third variable that will pick up whether you have three or more felony offenses over a period of 5 years. So given the current offense and then the two prior convictions, you can get points there. And then to top it off, the prosecutor is allowed to file a notice of intent to enhance the sentence because the person is an habitual felony offender. So once they file that notice, which they do pretty much all the time, the judge is allowed to then increase that range that has already been increased by three different variables. Now they can increase it by another 50% because the person has two prior felony convictions.
Wow. Now, I would say, as you're talking about this, some folks would say that's all very harsh, and others would say it's all very fair. Is there an appetite in the state, in Lansing, or around the state of Michigan, do you think, to change these, to reform these guidelines?
Well, I will say this, that sentencing is not a science. There is no one number that is the right answer for any given crime or any given individual who commits that crime. So you really have to balance a lot of things. And I think right now we're at a point where we have got this huge prison population. Mm-hmm. We have people serving long sentences. and it doesn't seem to have dramatically improved the situation. So we're looking at ways to be more effective. And so we're looking to see, are other states doing a better job and still protecting the public? I mean, I was looking this morning, and Minnesota has about 10,000 people in prison. We have 43,000 people. So, you know, there are potentially different ways to do this that are more effective.
And Russ, it strikes me that as people are being kept in prison longer, there's a much greater number of elderly or ill inmates.
That is true. We probably have a greater than average number of elderly and aging mm-hmm. inmates. And, you know, to your prior question, Cindy, it, mm-hmm. I think there's an appetite to look at it. You know, I don't know about if anyone has any ideas about how to change the guidelines right now. And that's what, you know, these folks from Council of State Governments, they have an outstanding national reputation for coming to states, evaluating their data, and recommending some good national best practices for states to use. They're working in a number of states right now, and I think this is kind of a national movement to take a look at corrections, criminal justice policy, and try to be smart on crime. You know, we're as you mentioned, people have differing views on this, and I think you talk to some prosecutors, and they'll say, yeah, you can talk about, you know, Minnesota and other states, but they don't have, you know, four of the top 10 most violent cities in the country, Saginaw, Flint, Pontiac, and Detroit. So, you know, they'll tell you that there's some uniqueness here in Michigan that causes the situation that we're in.
Well, there are two things we have to look at in terms of sentence reform. One is the length of the minimum sentence of the individual coming into the prison system. And that's a factor that's determined by the judge. And the sentencing guidelines will help to determine that sentence. And in Michigan, you cannot be released early before you serve the minimum sentence. So that's the first part of the equation. Mm-hmm. But the second part of the equation is the parole board and the parole discretion. Because in Michigan, unlike a number of states, we have both a minimum and a maximum sentence. Some states just have a single number. And in Michigan, the parole board has jurisdiction of the individual after they finish the minimum sentence up to the maximum sentence. And the maximum sentences can be much longer than the minimum. So, for example, if someone writes a bad check, takes it to the bank and tries to cash it, they can be convicted of an offense that has, by law, a 14-year maximum penalty. The judge might send them to prison for 2 years on the minimum term, and the parole board has them for 12 years, and they get to decide when they are released. And if people are held much longer than their minimum term, that creates this larger prison population. Mm. And then it also goes into the fact that, you know, we have average longer minimum sentence stays, not sentence length, but stays than other states. So you have to look at both parts of the equation.
And when you think of the fact that the Michigan Law Review and Commission is looking now at these sentencing guidelines, who's on this commission?
Well, there's some legislators and there's some folks from the public, but there, you know, there's folks from the it's a body that's contained in the legislative section of Michigan's government. So, and the legislators that are on there, I know, are very familiar with correctional issues. They've sat on our Appropriations Committee. Most of the ones are pretty familiar with this area. But I don't think that the members of the Law Revision Commission are going to do the analysis. I think we've brought in these outside experts. We're already giving them 5 years' worth of data. They're going to analyze that data, and then they're the ones that are going to be coming to the Law Revision Commission with some recommendations for policy changes here, probably in another year.
That's what I was wondering. So is there kind of a timetable at work, or is it fairly flexible?
Well, you know, it's going to take them a while to analyze the data, talk to folks within the criminal justice system here in Michigan. So probably sometime next year, I think we could expect some results of that analysis and maybe some policy recommendations.
And finally, are we seeing social attitudes towards crime and punishment changing in Michigan?
Well, I think that there's some recognition that longer sentences don't necessarily rehabilitate the offender any more than maybe a slightly shorter sentence. When it comes to juvenile offenders, what I see is a really interesting tension between the fact that there's a sense that juvenile offenders are more dangerous, that they're more likely to offend and maybe more likely to be violent. And if you look at risk assessment instruments that just predict based on where you fall within a group and how the group is likely to act, mm-hmm. youth correlates fairly – it has a higher correlation with recidivism. So young offenders will score high on these risk assessment instruments. And so if you just use that for sentencing, you would say, well, this is, you know, we should give this person a very harsh sentence. And those instruments actually were not designed to make the sentencing decision. But the U.S. Supreme Court has said three times now that juvenile offenders are less culpable and less blameworthy than adults. And they said that because juvenile offenders, their character is less formed. They're more easily influenced by peers and family. Parts of their brain have not completely developed in terms of risk assessment and looking at the consequences of their behavior. And even their environment, they have less control over the environment they're in than adults. So they're less culpable. So on the one hand, you know, maybe they score out as higher risk, but they're less culpable. And so I think that when you're sentencing that type of individual, you have to look at that both sides of the coin, because if you give the person, say, an extra 10 years because they, you know, you view them as high risk, if you're going from maybe a 20-year minimum to a 30-year minimum, maybe we're shooting ourselves in the foot by giving that extra 10 years, because that juvenile is going to outgrow those risk factors in probably 5, maximum 10 years. So giving them an extra 10 years doesn't really accomplish anything. And we need to look at what we're doing with juvenile offenders.
Russ, your thoughts?
Well, I think you're right, Cindy. I think that across the nation, and I think in part fueled by some of the budget issues that states have had across the country, people are looking at corrections policy, sentencing guidelines to see if they're getting that return on investment of tax dollars and enhanced public safety. I think what's unique in this time we're in now is that there's a lot of data out there, and you can get the data very, very quickly across this country on what states are doing that's working, what's not working. So I think, and you're also seeing other groups, you know, here in Michigan we have the business leaders of Michigan, the Detroit Chamber of Commerce have taken official positions on corrections reform issues, primarily for the budget implications involved. I mean, you know, you take a look at our history in the state and you haven't had business folks involved in corrections policy before. So it's a very unique time. It's an interesting time, but, you know, it's an exciting time because I think we're seeing the opportunity to really enhance our criminal justice system here and use our tax dollars most effectively for the citizens of Michigan.
Ann Yantis is a managing attorney for the State Appellate Defender's Office. Russ Marlin is with the Michigan Department of Corrections. And thanks to both of you for joining us on Stateside.
Thanks for having me, Cindy.
Yes, thank you very much, Cindy.